silently confident or silently terrified?
Yes, both. It's going to be awesome if we get to work.
It's going to be awesome indeed. Okay. So I'm going to go through some announcements and some updates on the competition first, and then I'll pause, see if anybody has anything they'd like to discuss related to the competition or to prior lectures, and then if we get there, I'll move on with today's lecture. So I think most of you have seen, I emailed out the link for this doodle to schedule a meeting with me. Four of the teams have already done that. If you haven't, please do that after class. And this is just a time for us to talk, myself and your team, and make sure we're not missing anything major. Ask any questions you have about your specific design. It's something you think is awesome and going to win the competition, but you don't want to ask in class and clue in the other teams. We do have a homework due this week. It's just one problem from the book. It is the sinusoidal approximation that we did for the series resonant converter, but everything is opposite. Instead of voltage source, it's current source. Instead of voltage loaded, it's current loaded. Instead of series resonance, it's parallel resonance. So the process is going to look the same, but all of the results will be slightly different. Okay. I don't think that'll take a ton of time. I'll also give some kind of hints on it during lecture today. But shouldn't be too much of a load, but I do want to make sure you guys get a chance to apply some of the sinusoidal analysis in the homework. Okay. As a reminder, the PCB layout is due Wednesday before the start of class. And I went and updated the competition requirements document on the website. Also uploaded some supplemental materials. No. So a week from 9 days from now. Same as on the schedule. Nothing changed. Just a reminder. So this signal board that I mentioned, I wanted to give some details on that. So what it's going to be is a Mojo version 3, which is a kind of developer-friendly FPGA board that can be programmed via USB. Got a Spartan 6 FPGA on it, natively clocked at 50 megahertz. I'm going to boost that clock up to 300 megahertz, like I mentioned before. That's your clock resolution available on this. And then this board is kind of a shield board. So what it's going to do is it's going to stack on top of the Mojo itself, mating with the female headers on this board. It's got some holes that are going to directly slot in there. And then it's got 4-pin male headers. These will be not in my model here, but male headers sticking up for you to connect to. There's 8 of these 4-pin headers. Each one is an isolated ground, a digital modulation signal, a 15-volt supply, and then an adjustable supply. That's just an LDO off the 15-volt supply, but you can set the resistors to determine what the voltage is. Okay. So there's 8 of them. 4 are independently isolated. Each of these have their own separate isolated ground and isolated supply. These are all independent isolation. And then there's 4 that are isolated from the FPGA, but these 4 share a common ground. I uploaded an Altium starter project to the website that you can get from the competition page. That's just a project with the PCB and a schematic and libraries for your footprints and schematic parts. And in that PCB library, I have the layout with labeled what are these connections for a single 4-pin connection and for all 8 of them spaced exactly as they will be on this board. So your options, if you choose to use this, and again, like I said before, you don't have to use this in any way. If you want to come up with your own, you know, you got a DSP that you've been using in research that you like using, and you want to handle getting the signals to the high side, either with your gate driver or your own isolation, that's fine. If you choose to use this to connect to it, you can either put kind of like these two boards will do, make it stackable. So put female headers on the bottom of your board that align to these male headers and just stack it on there and then route your traces where you want to go. Or you can buy cables that go from female header to female header to connect from this board over to your board. If you want cables to do that, you need to include those in your list of things you want bought when you submit your bill of material. Okay. Questions on that? All pretty clear? Okay. So that's an option, like I mentioned before, based on timing, I'll likely give you a blank PCB and parts, and you'll populate as many as you need of these drives. And I'll also be giving you code for that FPGA that'll do 8 arbitrary modulation signals. It's actually going to be a really long counter, and you can tell it how long to count, what the total period is, when the edge goes high, when the edge goes low. Just numbers you plug in for the different operating points, what you want those to be. So for the PCB layout, I updated, like I said, the document with a bit more detail on everything, kind of the process of submitting. So what I want is all of your files from Altium. The document says exactly which ones to include. Also, to order these, I want your login info to Sierra Circuits. So you're going to make an account there, and it's required that you go on and do this auto file verification check that Sierra Circuits does to make sure they can manufacture this PCB. So if you don't have an account with them, make an account with them. And on your account, make sure your password is not something you use for anything else. I don't want to know your personal password. Make a new one just for this so that you can share that with me, because we'll go in and order from your account. So you go in and order the bare bones board with these specs. The only one that there's some leeway on is, I said we can go up to 6 layers. If you only use 2, please only order 2. It'll be cheaper. Don't order 6 and then have them blank. Also, I think Sierra Circuits will kick that back with an error. But so use 2, 4, or 6, as many as you use. If you want to use 6, that's fine. Select 6. Just correspond to what you did on your board. Guess this one too, if you're super confident and only want 1, I don't have a problem with that. And there's a template Excel spreadsheet on the website now that shows what I want listed for the parts you want ordered. And I want you to follow that exactly, because I'm going to be taking all groups and combining them into one. So don't move columns around, or you can add things in blank columns, but keep the first 5 or 6 columns exactly as they are. And then this one I want to discuss. I also want, I'm calling actionable ordering links in quotes. So if you're ordering from DigiKey, I want a link to the cart that we can just order right away. Same thing for Mouser. If you're ordering from some other vendor, something like a quote with ordering information is good. What I don't want is, you know, an email that says, I want some ER26 cores. And then I have to go out and try to find them and find where I can purchase them for you. I want things that I can just take and send an order. Okay. Questions on that? This is just a show in Sierra Circuits what it looks like when you'll go in and do everything. Board dimensions, these will be your own board dimensions. But otherwise, I want to stick to the 15 mils, the 6 mils, 2 boards, 4 days, up to 6 layers. And when I request that you send me this link to order, what that needs is before class Wednesday, you need to have one board in your queue, and that board needs to show successful file review, ready to order. Okay? So when you submit your PCB files, if there's any issue with them, it'll come back. This order link won't be here, and it'll say issues found. Click this link to see what your issues are. You just fix those and re-upload. And what I want you to do is, if that happens, you'll have a whole list of boards in here. A bunch of them have failed, and maybe some boards you've ordered yourself in the past. I want you to move all those to the hide folder. So if there's only one board in here, that's the one you want ordered. Just move them over to this tab. You'll still have them. You've got things in there you want to look at later. But I want to log in and just see, hey, one board, order it. That'll just help me. So I'm going to be in a rush Wednesday to make sure I get all these out before Thanksgiving break. Okay, questions? Comments, concerns related to this, related to anything else in the course? Okay. If none, we'll move on. So what we've been looking at are these AC link converters and applying sinusoidal analysis to them. We went through and did our average model for a switch network. Again, this was a voltage source inverter. Your homework, it'll be a current source inverter. Rather than a square wave voltage being generated, it's going to generate a square wave current. The thing with the diode rectifier, we did a voltage loaded. You're going to be looking at a current loaded. We gave a hint on that. That is the answer to how a current loaded diode full bridge operates up at the top there in purple. But the process for all is going to be the same. You're just kind of doing the dual in each case. We derived our complete equivalent circuit that had our DC ports and our AC fundamental only approximation in the middle, and used that to solve the complete transfer function of the converter. And we found that in this case, our conversion ratio was the tank transfer function. Okay. What I'm going to do next is we looked at the output characteristic as well, found that this resonant converter is going to have this elliptical output characteristic, which is potentially a difficult thing to deal with, since a lot of the converters we want to design look like things like constant voltage source, constant current source, constant power source. This elliptical characteristic is not well matched to any of those. And that means is that for any small change in load, we're going to have to develop a control network that can respond to that. We've got this elliptical characteristic that really was determined by our tank transfer function. At a given frequency, we can change the magnitude of that transfer function by changing the frequency. So frequency modulation is one way to control these. Doing so will have us jump between these different sized ellipses. So, for example, if I was operating here trying to be a constant current source, might be on this ellipse, and I would have an equivalent load that looks like this. If my load increases, I would jump somewhere here, and I would be operating at this point, and my control action would need to jump to a different trajectory in order to regulate me back to constant current. Typical characteristics of things. I mentioned earlier when we started talking about resonant converters, some of the early applications were things like lamp ballast and electrosurgical generators. Okay. electrosurgical generators, if you're not familiar, devices used in modern surgery that use a high voltage at a high frequency, purely AC, to arc down the tissue and actually perform a cutting action with electrical arcing rather than with a blade. The advantage of it for surgical applications is that it not only cuts, but it has a very thin layer of burning on the sides of that cut that prevents bleeding. Okay. For those, as you're cutting through tissue, the impedance of tissue can change over a very wide range from pretty much open circuit to nearly short circuit. So we could be on really any of these resistance trajectories. For that, they really want it to look like a constant power source, delivering a constant power to provide cutting action, but they have to put some limits. It's not going to go to infinite current to keep that power. If the voltage drops, it's not going to go to infinite voltage if you get to an open. So it really does look like this green trajectory. They want constant current, constant power, constant voltage limits. They have to develop controls to regulate what are often resonant converters on all three of these trajectories. Lamp ballast, a little bit different. This is for gas lamps, HID lamps. It's a gas confined in a tube with two electrodes on either end. And to light that lamp, you need to provide a very high voltage that will ignite. It'll polarize the gas, create a plasma that begins emitting light. And then you need to be rapidly switching voltage back and forth, because if you keep a large DC voltage on it, it's going to, all the ions migrate to one end and the lamp will shut off. Okay? So it needs AC, it needs very high voltage to ignite, and then once it does ignite and once you ionize the gas, it's a pretty good conductor, and then the voltage drops way down. Okay? So a lamp like that often would have a characteristic that looks like, from startup, I need to go out to some very high voltage, and then once I ignite, it'll drop back down and then behave like a constant, fairly small resistance. I need to be able to control this thing to track this weird waveform, weird characteristic. So what this is showing is that I have some resistance of the plasma, but if I drop down to too low of a current, too low of a power, I'm not going to be able to keep it ionized. It's going to deionize, and then I need to ignite to get it back ionized. Below this point, my ignition. Right. So then we were looking at sketching the tank impedance from the input and the transfer function, and kind of assessing what we might get out of our series resonant converter by looking mostly at the input impedance. We found that for FF greater than F0, we're going to get inductive loading, and ZVS is possible, but we may lose it as we go to very light load, because our input impedance, as RE increases, goes up. Eventually at open circuit, our input impedance is just infinite everywhere. It's just an open. Okay. Over here on the left, we have capacitive loading. I wrote that we get no ZVS. Could also say that we get zero current switching, which could be advantageous if we were kind of at low frequency using IGBTs, and that was our dominant loss mechanism. If we go to high frequency, unless we have a converter with 1,000 amps and 2 volts, we probably prefer ZBS to ZCS with MOSFETs. Okay. What I'll do now is, so here's our transfer function. Because I asked you to do it on the homework, what I want to do is I'm going to take this and manipulate it into normalized form. So tank transfer function H of S was RE over RE plus SL plus 1 over SC. And if I multiply through by SC, we'll get as RE SC over S squared LC plus RESC plus 1. And I can define some characteristics of this. I'll have R naught is root L by C. Omega naught is 1 over root LC. And then what I'll call my effective Q, QE, which is my loaded Q factor. Right? And we differentiate from normal Q, because normal Q is just the L and the C and their own parasitic resistances. What's the Q of that network? QE is what's the Q when I apply this equivalent load resistance back. So that load resistance is not a loss mechanism, but it is altering the Q of the resonance. So find QE as R naught divided by RE, which is the Q that will show up on our plot that I was drawing that varied with RE. Okay. So if I then take this expression and want to write it in terms of my R naught, omega naught, QE, put it into standard form, the only thing that I need to note is, what am I going to do with this C? Check QE times omega naught is R naught over RE, which is 1 over RE times R naught times omega naught. Here, my root L's cancel, and my root C's become C out of the radical. And this is 1 over RE C. And I have that show up in both of my terms that are linear with F, RE times C. Right. So I can now write this as S over QE omega naught over S over omega naught squared plus S over QE omega naught plus 1. This is my general H of F. Now, what I want to do is look at what happens with that as I select a specific switching frequency. Right, with my sinusoidal approximation, what I'm saying is I only really care what's going on at the fundamental, at FF. So I can plug in S goes to J omega F and see what the magnitude of this is. That's the only thing that's going to influence my sinusoidal approximation. So I want to look at H of S goes to J omega S equal to J omega S over QE omega naught over J omega S over omega naught squared plus one. Okay. So omega S over omega naught, 2 pi FS over 2 pi F naught, the 2 pi's cancel, and FS over F naught is what we've been calling capital F, right? So down here, capital F is FS by F naught. Both are omegas, the 2 pi's cancel, same thing. I'm going to have F in all three of these terms. So this looks like J times F over QE over J squared is negative 1. So this will be F squared plus J F over QE plus 1. Oop. Negative. Okay. So what I'd like to do is find the magnitude of this thing, which is going to tell me what my conversion ratio is. Now I've got something with a complex number in the denominator. to get rid of that, I'm going to multiply by the complex conjugate on the top and bottom. I'm going to do 1 minus f squared minus jf over qe. Multiply the same thing on top. I'm going to do that. What I get is, let's see, the bottom, my 1 minus f squared and my jf over qe are going to square, and I'm going to lose the cross terms because I've got x plus y times x minus y. At the bottom, I'm going to get 1 minus f squared squared, and then I'm going to have these two terms multiplying. J squared is negative 1, but that's going to cancel with the negative sign here. So I'll get plus f squared over qe squared. And as I hope, that got a complex number out of the denominator. So now my denominator is all real. In the numerator, what I'm going to get is my 1 minus f squared. I'm going to multiply my jf over qe, and then same thing's going to happen here. We get plus f squared over qe squared. Okay. I'm going to need another slide. All right, so if I take this to the next page. Did I get it? Okay, so if I want to take the magnitude of that, denominator is all real, so that'll stick. The numerator, I'm going to have complex part squared plus real part squared, square root of all that. So this is going to look like, okay, so now I'm going to pull s squared over qe squared out of the radical up top, and that's going to give me f over qe times radical minus f squared squared plus f squared over qe squared over if I call this thing x, I've got root x over x, which is 1 over root x, right? So this is going to become, f over qe times 1 over root minus f squared squared plus f squared over qe squared. And I can further simplify a little bit by pushing this term down into the radical. By doing that, I'd get qe squared over f squared multiplying what's in the radical. So it's going to leave me with 1 here, and here I would have to FOIL out if I don't immediately see it. So this will give me radical I would have is QE squared over F squared times 1 minus 2F squared plus F to the 4th plus 1. I push that QE squared over F squared and multiply that term. Okay. This is equal to 1 over root QE squared 1 over F squared minus 2 plus F squared plus 1. And this 1 over F squared minus 2 plus F squared, that looks like 1 over F minus F squared. So, and this is equal to, for our series resonant converter, my conversion ratio. So my conversion ratio is controlled only by, for a fixed converter, fixed LC, the loading, and the switching frequency. Right? Okay. I'm gonna do one more thing here, which is a bit of an aside, but it's a hint for the homework, so I hope you'll excuse my transgression. Here I had this term 2 IP1 over pi cosine cn. But when I went and solved my conversion ratio, that term wasn't part of it. I never had to deal with cosine cn. Right? For other converters, as you may come across at some point, that cosine cn is going to be part of your conversion ratio. You need to figure out what to do with that. Okay? What is cn? Cn is the phase between the voltage and current looking into the tank. Right? That is just carve off a small section here. I have this cosine of Cn, phase of the voltage and current going into the tank, which means it's the phase of the input impedance of the tank, right? So I could figure out what that phase is analytically if that shows up in some equation. One way to simplify this cosine Cn is to realize that looking on my real imaginary plane, my input impedance is some vector. I'll draw it like this. Could be anywhere, right? But it has a real part. And then, oops, it has a real part, but it's not there. Imaginary part. And this angle is Cn. This is the magnitude of Zn. So looking at that, cosine of Cn is going to be the real part over the magnitude, right? Real part for the series resonant converter is just RE, right? The real part is the resistor. Everything in the tank itself is purely reactive. Okay, that's your hint. So back to what we were doing. So I just generated some MATLAB plots of the input impedance and transfer function for the series resonant converter, because my hand drawings aren't great, you know. And I want to draw out some of the characteristics here. Like we said, we kind of divide our frequency range between FS greater than F naught, where we have a chance for ZVS, and FS less than F naught, where it would be zero current switching, where somewhat mutually exclusive, we get one or the other. So characteristics of the series resonant converter, if we operate above resonance, we get zero voltage switching, at least for some of the load range. And when we look at what happens over the load range, this line was our short circuit case. This was our ZN0, our ZI0 is ZN evaluated with RE goes to a short. And then our ZI infinity, ZN evaluated with RE goes to an open, was way up here, up at infinite. So one nice thing, we've got a voltage source inverter supplying this input impedance, right? And we have this, if we choose any specific switching frequency and look how the impedance changes as we change RE, this is as RE goes from zero to infinite, my impedance always increases, right? That's a good thing. Why is that? It means that, well, I'm going to be hitting it with the same magnitude of voltage always, right? And the tank impedance is going to change in such a way that as my output power decreases, which is going towards an open, I have less current coming out. So my current is going to be smallest at the lowest power. That's what I want. That's not going to be true of all tanks. Some of them are going to have more circulating current at low power. So it means that my conduction losses will be highest when my power is highest. I like that, right? So conduction losses decrease at low output power. Okay. I have more current in the tank when I have more current going out. Ideally, I'd like zero current in the tank always and a bunch of current going out. That's not going to be possible. Failing that, this is the best option. Okay. So what I'm going to get into now is looking at, one more comment on the series resonant converter before we move on. That may take us to the end of class. I've got a couple kind of asides here, things that we're not going to cover in a lot of detail. The first is operation at the subharmonic modes of this converter. It's going to be true for a lot of these resonant converters. So my sinusoidal approximation assumed that only the switching frequency mattered because the switching frequency was right in the vicinity of this resonant frequency. Okay. If my switching frequency is, for example, much lower than the resonant frequency, say 3 times lower, then what happens is my third harmonic falls right in this high Q arena, right in the high Q of my input impedance. My fundamental is way back at low frequency, it sees some high impedance. And it's actually going to be that third harmonic that excites the tank that's the one that's going to pass through. In that case, I can still use sinusoidal approximation. All the answers are all the same. It's still just the third harmonic that matters. I can do my sinusoidal approximation at that third harmonic. The only difference is the amplitude that I'm exciting the tank with is decreased, because instead of being 4 over pi, now the amplitude of my harmonics is 4 over pi, and if I do the Fourier expansion at the third harmonic, 4 over 3 pi times Vg. I'm hitting it with a smaller signal, because only that third harmonic matters, and it's relatively smaller. So as I start looking at on the top, what I did was plotted what I would get for the conversion ratio, which is the tank transfer function, at F naught is equal to FS, at F naught is equal to 3FS, 5, 7. So I just did the first 4 harmonics. So this is what would happen if I vary my switching frequency over a relatively large range. So here's F is equal to 1, and as I go less than that, we said we don't really want to do with the series resonant converter, but we're in an IGBT converter and want DCS, or just for general understanding of the concept, we get these points where if I decrease far enough, my harmonic begins exciting the tank. And now that's the dominant factor in determining my output voltage. Okay. And here I just added all 4 of them together to show kind of the envelope of my transfer function. Okay. This is the high Q case where I've got very high Q, so I get these spikes. Okay. I start going to the lower Q case where not so high Q, so kind of my region of high gain is dropped and widened. What I end up with is an envelope that begins to look something like this. Okay. One of the reasons this is important is if I am trying to control this by altering my switching frequency, I'm keeping the same operation and I'm just moving my switching frequency to change the gain of the converter. I might say, okay, I'm going to design it so that at full power, I'm somewhere here. And then to reduce the output voltage, I'm going to move this way. I'm going to have some control loop on a voltage-controlled oscillator that decreases my switching frequency in order to alter the gain. Okay. The problem is going to be I'm going to design that with some reference polarity. I'm going to design my controller for that to say, okay, if you want the voltage to go down, decrease switching frequency, right? And up until right here, that's going to work just fine for me. But as I go below this point, decreasing the switching frequency is going to increase my conversion ratio. I'm going to end up with positive feedback. My system's going to run away and be unstable, right? So I'm going to need, if I want to do that, some sort of more complex control. Or I need to operate on this end of things where switching frequency only goes greater than resonant frequency. So all my harmonics are way out past. It's only when I decrease below that those harmonics fall within the resonant high Q band. Okay. Here, we would end up with positive feedback. Typical implementation of this has something like a what we call switching frequency modulation. Here I'm sticking with 50% duty cycle all the time. I'm just adjusting the frequency of it. It'd be something like sensing the output voltage, feeding it back through some control transfer function that we designed, and feeding that into a VCO or voltage controlled oscillator. that then provides my variable FS modulation signals. I'll have to call in the book delta of T. Okay. So a simple linear controller here, a PI, PID, is not going to be up to the task because we would end up with positive feedback if I ever try to go below M of about 0.5 in this case, and that point changes with loading. Okay. So if I can guarantee that I never want to run down here, I could be fine. If I need to have stability across a full range of conversion ratios and loads, I need some sort of more complex control in this knowledge of what's going on inside the converter. Looking at the complete control plane for the SRC, I've got a couple of slides here taken from the book, I'll just mention briefly. So this is F versus my conversion ratio for curves of varying Q. And you see these subharmonic modes pop in down here when F goes to 1/3 and F goes to 0.2, 1/5, so the third harmonic, fifth harmonic, and then the fundamental that we've already looked at. Okay. There are also different operating modes down in these regions. The converter can go into DCM where there's insufficient voltage to turn the diode full bridge on during the entire resonant period. I thought I'd mention that. I don't think we'll go through that in any detail, largely because we've already motivated that this is a region we don't want to operate in, most likely. Okay. So if we're out here, we'll be in the operating mode that we've analyzed. So DCM and CCMK is indication of the number of resonant periods per switching period. Which has to do with letting it ring out multiple times per period. Like I said, we won't concern ourselves too much with the details of that here. Okay. So what I want to go through next is look at briefly the parallel resonant converter and then jump into really just a comparison of different tanks, looking at what their merits and detriments are. Parallel resonant converter, again, a voltage source switch network at the input, a tank here that now has a shunt capacitance rather than a series capacitance, diode rectifier network for the current type of analysis, and then the output filter is now current loaded. So this is going to have a slightly different solution, a different value for RE, but for most of our analysis, we can abstract from that and just say there is some equivalent loading resistance. Okay. I'll put a transformer in this. Not going to change anything. It's an ideal transformer, other than I'll have conversion ratio N in all my transfer functions. So with this parallel resonant converter, let's just get through the input impedance. Before we close, what is the input impedance of this going to look like? So this is where I'll connect my equivalent load, RE. So in a log scale, I'm going to have asymptotes for 1 over SCP, SL, and RE will be variable. So if RE is where I've drawn it, ZN looks like SL in series with 1 over SCP plus, in parallel with RE. So I'll take my 1 over SC and my RE asymptote, and I'll take the smaller of the two of them, which will give me something that looks like horizontal then down. And then since it's in series with SL, I'll take the larger of those. Going to give me something that's flat over here, then ramps up. So my impedance is going to look like this. And as I begin increasing RE, it's going to look like this, and eventually something like that. Okay. So what do I have? Over here on the right, I have this nice behavior where I stay inductive and it looks like I get ZVS across the entire load, and I don't have this problem of load going to infinity and potentially giving me not enough energy to actually fully obtain ZVS. So it's always going to be inductive loading. The problem is the impedance going from short circuit to open circuit is actually decreasing the input impedance. Okay. That means is that I'm going to have my highest currents in the tank at zero output power. My conduction losses will be worse when I have no output power. So whatever currents I need to get my full output power, things are only going up from there. Okay. Problem with the parallel resonant converter. We'll talk more about that and then look at two other tank configurations next class.